You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
So what a great evening on the porch tonight. A beautiful Texas sunset, and I'm digging the porch. I'll tell you what, now that the weather's changed and we're outside, I just love this room.
Yeah, I do too, and I like that it's screened in and we get no bugs. That's the
big thing. I see them out there, though.
they're out there waiting, but they're not in here. So, hey, did you know that today is the 14-year anniversary of the last show of Seinfeld, your very favorite show?
You know, it's so funny that you're mentioning that because, you know, we had our daughter-in-law here, and we were she had not really heard too much about Seinfeld
before. I don't think she's ever seen it.
And I was talking about, you know, Seinfeld episodes, and, you know, I love to do that, right?
Yes.
And our son Brian loves to talk.
I think you remember every word from those episodes.
Well, I'm envious of Brian because he can actually quote every word in a Seinfeld episode. So, I'm giving her the Seinfeld episode, and she had a deer in the headlights look. So.
Well, luckily for her, you have all the episodes on CDs or
thanks.
DVDs or
thanks
whatever
for the
they
Christmas
are.
Present a few years ago. I appreciate
so
that.
We can let her see them because that was one of the best shows ever, the show about nothing.
And you know, the thing I really liked about that show is that the unique comedians, you know, that they had on that show, every single one was so different. Yet they kind of all bound together, and they just came out with such hilarious skits on that show. And I miss it. I wish they would do sort of a Seinfeld reunion or do something like that.
Well, it was a great show, and, you know, I mean, there's so many times that we bring it up in conversation, too. But here's a not a Seinfeld show. And I wrote an article about this on America Out Loud because it's something that I believe strongly in. And this was that this mother of a high school student in Morris County that went to the school board. Her daughter was on the cheerleading, trying out for cheerleading squad.
Oh, I read the article. It was great.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
No, I appreciate it.
Thank you. And the daughter was trying out, and she did not make the team. And so the mother went to the school board and to the athletic director and complained that this was unfair. And so they relented, and the athletic director said, everybody's on the team or nobody's on the team.
That is so unfair. What is the mindset behind that?
Well, I mean, the mindset of it depends on whose mindset we're talking about.
Well, no, so I mean, first of all, let's start out with the person that made the complaint.
Well,
let's talk about the
mother's mindset is it's her little girl, and I understand that. I have a little girl too, who's no longer little, but she was, and you're very protective. And she didn't make the team, and I'm sure she was crushed, but. That's one mindset, okay?
But isn't that part of life? I mean, isn't it? I mean, don't we all go through that, Linda? I mean, I've gone through it. You've gone through it. Our kids go through it. You know, that's just a part of life. You know, failure, you know, the adage, it's not how many times you fall down. It's how you pick yourself up and move on.
Well, and that's the lesson exactly that she didn't teach to her daughter. So what did she teach and what did she not teach? She didn't teach her daughter to get up and, first of all, to understand and maybe look in the mirror and realize why she didn't get chosen. Maybe understand that she needed to work a little bit harder, or maybe she didn't just have the exact same natural talents as other people. Okay, all other things being equal, everybody can't get chosen. There's a fixed number of people that were going to be on the squad. So you just have to accept that and move on. Maybe she could have taught her to pick another thing that she's more suited for.
Right.
Maybe she could have encouraged her to work harder and try out again next year.
There's, right again.
There's lots of different ways that this could have been handled. But going to the school and demanding that her daughter be on the team is the worst of those. And I feel very strongly about this because we've done this throughout our society with the everybody gets a trophy type of attitude. And the everybody gets a trophy type of attitude helps no one. It doesn't give the kids self-esteem because kids, even though they're kids, are not stupid. And they know when somebody's better than them at something. Everybody has their own special talent in life. And everybody doesn't have the same talent. So those people that excel at whatever that talent is, whether it be, you know, pitching a baseball game or hitting a baseball or, you know, ice skating or soccer or whatever, music, whatever it is.
You remember when we both were coaches and you coached, baseball and your team did just so fantastic, by the way. And I coached soccer and we would come in contact with these parents that just demanded, you know, that their kids play on the field the entire time. And I remember one time there was a young boy, you know, I was teaching, coaching 10 and 12, right, the 10 to 12-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And I had a kid that was just overweight. There's no other way to say it. He was overweight. He was a sweet kid. I really liked the kid. And I was doing everything I possibly could to play that kid as much as I thought the kid could take physically, right? Because, you know, when you are overweight, you just can't do things that other kids can do, and you don't want to hurt them. But the parents just would, just light into me because I wouldn't play this kid for a whole half hour, you know, for a whole period. And you just can't do that. There are just some things that some people can do that other people can't do.
Well, okay. And I'm sure that young man can absolutely, or could at the time, and can still do things that other kids on the team can't
absolutely
do.
Absolutely, he
so,
could.
So
yes.
Everybody has their strengths, yes, and everybody has their weaknesses, but everybody cannot win at everything. And what is life about when you grow up and you become an adult? It's about being the best at what you can do. That's how we succeed.
And taking adversity. You know, there's something else that I want to bring up that happened with this kid on my soccer team that I would be worried would happen to this girl where the mom goes into the school board and makes a complaint. That kid was absolutely embarrassed because the parents kind of chewed me out in front of everybody else, right? And he was so embarrassed by the behavior of his mom and dad. And I will bet you that mother did no favors to that young girl in the school.
Well, she didn't do favors in a number of ways, and that's a good point that you make. She also, that young lady now will probably be resented by the other girls on the team who did really make the squad, who did work hard, who did what they needed to do to make the squad, and now their work has been diminished. And that's not fair to them either, and she's going to feel this, which breaks my heart for her that she's going to have to feel this going to school. And, you know, it could evolve into things like cyberbullying. Lots of things can happen from this. The bottom line for me is that mother did not do her daughter a favor. Now, nor did the athletic director of that school. The athletic director, by kind of bowing to those wishes, really showed everybody that what they did was not as important as it should have been. And that was unfair to all of them as well.
I agree. That's a good point.
And here's the thing about life. If you strive to be just one of the pack, that's what you're going to be all your life. But if you strive to win at something, you can't win at everything. So you have to just... You have to strive at the things that you can win at, the things that you are good at. And by the way, those are the things that people should be doing anyway, the things that they're good at. Those are the things that make them happy in life. And those are the things that give them a reason to get up. There's so many ways that this is wrong for me that my heart breaks for everybody involved here in this kind of mess, mostly for the girl who didn't make the team. But I think that the mom is going to have repercussions. I think the school is going to have repercussions. All of the kids on the squad are going to have repercussions. And it may end up being, instead of everybody's on the team, that nobody's on the team. It may very well end up that way.
You know, that's sad. And one of the things that I worry about is if the girl, we know nothing about this girl, but if the girl is not mature enough and can't rise above this, then the lesson that this girl learns from her mom's behavior is that she has an entitlement syndrome, right? And so if she doesn't get an A, if she just gets a B, then there's going to be complaining, right? And then she needs a safe zone, and then she needs a blankie, and, you know, then going all the way through life, and she'll have just tremendous interpersonal relationship problems. Well, and she will never succeed unless she learns a lesson from this.
That's true. And is it, if we're going to be all-inclusive to everybody, it's all or nothing. So does everybody in medical school now get to be a doctor regardless of their scores?
Right.
In the major leagues because they don't want their feeling hurt? Does everybody get to be in the Philharmonic Orchestra regardless of how well they play so that they don't feel not included? I mean, we've taken political correctness to a ridiculous level here. Everybody is good at something, and everybody is not good at some things. There are things, you know, you're definitely not good at things like maybe math. And
I flunked every math class I ever had.
And okay. I'm proud of it, right?
In a couple of years, I had tutors, and I still flunked it.
And I am good at math. So I would, you know, that's how people work together. My assistant at work that's been with me for well over 20 years, I work chaotically, and she is as neat as a pin. So we work really well together. I'm better at some things. She's better at some things. Therefore, we work well together. That's how life works. The lesson here was not taught, and that's a shame.
Well, you know, the people that are supposed to be the adults in the room are not being the adults in the room.
No.
Right? So, like, the mom, who's supposed to be the adult, is supposed to be the mentor, is supposed to help her daughter with direction in life, and that's what parents do. And sometimes we use, you know, tough love, and sometimes we use, we talk about ourselves in our own failures, right, as we were growing up. And, you know, you're trying to find some middle ground with your kids, and that didn't take place there. The next thing, like you said, is that the school basically kowtowed to a whining and complaining parent, and like you said, it belittled everything that all of the other girls did who worked hard and who made the team. And so no lesson was learned whatsoever from that. It is just so disappointing and sad.
And, you know, even if you look at our four kids, each one is completely different one from the other, and each one has completely different strengths and weaknesses in life.
Right.
And even though kids are brought up in the same home, they are all different. So that's a lesson that needs to be taught and respected, and we need to have winners out there, not an all-inclusive team, everybody gets a trophy. There are winners. That's what the game of life is about.
And I absolutely agree.
There is a player in San Antonio on the San Antonio Spurs, which is
our big basketball team.
And boy, are they popular out here. And he's first of all, the thing, his name is Pau Gasol. And what's interesting about him is that he was one of the few players drafted from another country. He was drafted from Barcelona some years ago. And he wrote an article that absolutely is so, so fascinating about a coach speaking of being the best. And the coach in the NBA, and she is a female. And his article says that not that it's time for a woman to be a coach, but Becky Hammon, who has coached on the San Antonio team, not as the head coach, but as an assistant coach, he considers to be one of the best coaches that there is in basketball.
Wow.
And she's a little short female next to these guys. But it's a very fascinating article. And the reason is he doesn't think that she should be a coach because she's a woman, but because she is so good and so intuitive about how she coaches basketball. And I thought it was a fascinating thing because I've never seen a player actually say, it is time for this person to be a coach. Okay, not as a woman, but as a great coach. And there's a woman who, again, exceeded and did the best she could do at what she did and what she loved. And look where she is. She's being considered to be a head coach in the NBA. Wouldn't that be fabulous?
You know, it is fabulous. And I think there's only, and I'm not a huge basketball fan, so forgive me, but I think there's only one other woman out there.
There's not a head coach.
Right? No, no, not a head coach. And maybe it's not even basketball. Maybe it's football. But, you know, obviously there's almost none. And so that's a remarkable accomplishment in and of itself.
It is remarkable. And his article is called An Open Letter About Female Coaches. It is really, really worth reading.
Well, that's fantastic. Hey, you know what? Speaking about people that have strived to do their best, I've got a great human interest story one of my former undergraduate students. Because, you know, I taught criminal justice and police science forever. And, you know, I want to talk about this young lady. You know, I'm always going to refer to her as a young lady, but her name is Lisa Menegi, and she's a sergeant now with the Sacramento Police Department in California. And she is now getting ready to retire after 27 years on the force. And I started her off when she was just a young lady, and she was really one of the best undergraduate students that I was honored to teach. She later went from De Anza College in Cupertino, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she got a scholarship because she was a hell of a volleyball player, right?
Okay.
Just tremendous volleyball player, and went up to Sacramento State University and played volleyball up there, and then subsequently joined the police force, and is now heading the domestic violence unit. I believe that's what she's doing at the Sacramento Police Department. And you want to talk about a person that has had a life of accomplishment, being the best, and now moving on with her life to be the best at something else. So I just want to wish Lisa a wonderful retirement, and I just wanted to thank her for her service together, you know? So
well,
I just wanted to talk with you about that young lady.
Well, I know that she's somebody that you've kept in touch with over the years, and right, she's had a very accomplished career. Again, somebody trying to be the best at what they do and getting the rewards for it. That's what we need to be teaching our kids. Obviously, her parents did a good job there.
And I think they did. Hey, I am ready for another cup of coffee. How about you?
I am too.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Yeah, I had to get one more sip of coffee and try to wash down some of this outstanding cheesecake that Melissa brought in. Anyway, okay, so I want to talk about something that, you know, sort of frost my socks, so to speak, and that is these politicians that we have with their overreach and basically screwing the public in governance, okay? And I want to start out with one of our favorite states, and that's California, one we escaped from.
We need days to talk about
and
this.
I'm telling you, you can't make this stuff up. So Assemblyman Miguel Santiago, he's a Democrat out of, I think, SoCal, and he has introduced a bill in the California legislature to basically combine the two presidents' days into one day, but not necessarily call it, you know, President's Day or whatever. But the most important thing to me is he wants to hold the President's Day, change the dates of President's Day to May 1st, which is International Workers' Day, or the one day that the Communist Party celebrates and does all their parades. You know, it used to be called, Communist Workers' Day. Then it became, that was a little bit too stringent, so they changed the name to International Workers' Day. But to try to use the President's Days, which are Washington and Lincoln,
right,
and change the complete days and move it to May 1st, and which is International Workers' Day, and they know this when they submit this legislation, is absolutely a disgrace.
It is a disgrace. And Workers' Day has no correlation, in my mind at least, to Presidents Lincoln and Washington. The point of those holidays, as I recall when I was a kid, was we were honoring what they did in building our country from the very beginning of our country. And what is Workers' Day? I mean, we can do that anytime if you want to celebrate.
Well, we have a Workers' Day. It's called Labor Day.
Well, that's exactly right. And by the way, every day is Workers' Day. We're all working every day, so I don't know. I don't know about that. But I do think, see, this again goes back to taking America out of America.
I agree, sweetheart.
It's not keeping history the way that it was, and now we're going to ignore that those two presidents were there. We're not going to honor them anymore, and we're going to honor, I don't even know what here.
Well, it's the day. You know, I'm not saying that they're taking away the title of President's Day, okay? They are combining the two President's Days, but they are holding it on a known socialist and communist day of celebration, okay? And
okay,
that is the antithesis of democracy.
Why are they changing anything with this in the first place? What is the issue with it?
Well, you know what? With all the problems that the state of California has, they've got time to screw around with stuff like this. Is this what the people are spending their money on?
Oh, absolutely.
With politicians like Santiago and this ridiculousness? You know, look at the homelessness problems. Look at the taxes, the business regulation, every single thing, the illegal aliens, the allowing them to vote now. They're talking about letting them vote.
Yes.
The giving them the driver's licenses, basically giving them everything.
And
okay?
They're putting solar power on your house that you have to pay for.
Well, that's another thing.
Right?
That's none of their business
and
to do that.
And making you buy electric cars and you don't have a choice anymore. So it is like a communist state. I mean, it's becoming that way to me because the government's telling you every single thing that you can do and that you can't do. And there is no freedom. That's why I absolutely love Texas, because I feel like a free person here.
Well, you know, California has such high prices for their homes, right? And in the San Francisco Bay Area, and also extending down to Santa Barbara County, they were talking about the median price for a home. What do you think the median price of a home is in the San Francisco Bay Area and also in Santa Barbara County? Just take a guess.
I think it's over $1 million.
It's $1.4 million. Okay, so now, and I think they're starting it in 2020, they are going to require the solar panels on the roofs, which is going to add, they believe, anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000 per home extra.
Well, okay. And the prices are already sky high there, and people can't afford homes. So now that's going to just price out a whole nother segment of the population.
Well, you know, it's just ridiculous. And speaking about ridiculous things, I don't know if you heard this, but up in Seattle, Washington, the city council has just passed a tax law that is basically picking on the largest businesses that they have in Seattle, Washington, which is Starbucks Coffee and Amazon. All right, and here's what they've done. And you just know there's going to be litigation over this. What they've done is they put an excise tax on both of these companies to pay for the homeless people that they have in Seattle, Washington. And, you know, that's in King County. And per employee, a tax of $275 per employee of each one of those corporations to subsidize the homeless population and, you know, develop, you know, programs and everything for them. And then they are going to go to other businesses as well.
Well, I have a question.
I just can't believe it.
And I don't know if you know the answer to this, because I don't know the answer to this either. But let's take Starbucks, and both Starbucks and Amazon, they have employees, lots of employees there in Seattle, but they have lots and lots of employees around the country and other places.
Around the world.
Around the world, both of them, right?
Amazon and Starbucks.
So do they have to pay that fee for every employee around the world or just in Seattle?
Just the ones that are in Seattle, and I don't know how many.
So you did know the answer.
It's just absolutely amazing. And what's amazing, well, you know, here's the irony to this. Both of those corporations are run by liberal progressives.
Right.
Right? So I want to just see if they're going to put their money where their mouth
is.
Yeah, okay?
How's that working for them right now?
Well, we're just going to find out. I think it's just an ironic twist.
Here's the other thing. So that money is supposed to be helping the homeless. Okay. And that's going to be a significant amount of money for all of the employees.
Oh, $275
per employee
per year?
I don't know how many employees they have, but they have a lot of employees.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you take that money, and what's going to happen? Starbucks and Amazon, they're not going to absorb that. They're going to pass that along to you and I when we go to Starbucks or when we go to Amazon for something. Because that's how the world works. This is not something that they can just, you know, take in. I mean, people seem to think that businesses can absorb any kind of cost you want to throw at them, and that's not true. They have to get that money back somehow. So, therefore, we're going to be paying more for our cup of coffee.
Well,
we're going to pay,
not us. Paying, people in Seattle are, you know.
Well, no.
Well,
no,
you're right. No, I see where you're going with this.
It's going to be everywhere.
They'll
spread it out, and we are going to pay more. And then that little merry-go-round, you just keep going round and round, and you never can get off, because then something else has to go up and something else has to go up. And that's where they just don't get it when they do what they're doing. If they took some money and not supported all these homeless people, but they trained them to have a job, it would cost ever so much less, like these other cities that you and I have talked about.
Well, like Denver. We were talking about Denver doing a program.
Doing a work program.
Exactly.
And those things are things that can actually help people and get them off the system, get them back in, you know, the workforce and so forth.
Well, let me tell you what bothers me about this whole issue of governance, which is why I brought this thing up, not only because that was a freaky thing to talk about, you know, but it is the same politicians that, by and large, have created and ratified and encouraged the homeless problem. Okay? And let me tell you, look at the big picture of this thing. They have kicked that can down the road on mental health forever and ever and ever. You know, I've talked about this before.
Yes.
It is a national problem and a national disgrace. They have not built the institutions that they need to treat some of these people that are homeless, that are clearly experience major psychological disorders. Okay?
Yeah.
They have done nothing for that. They have done nothing to deal with the drug abuse problem. The judges have done nothing to deal with the panhandling issues. That used to be against the law. You couldn't stand out on the side of the road and stand by the freeway and stand by an intersection or, you know, all these different places where you see people begging for money all the time. It's absolutely disgraceful. There used to be laws against that. And, you know, and speaking of judges that have helped to create this problem, I want to go back to that, and you wrote an article about this.
Oh, okay, we must be talking about Judge Schaefer.
Yeah, we are talking about Judge Catherine Schaefer.
I know that one right away.
You know her by heart. And she's that Kings County Superior Judge that messed around with the Homeless Act, right? The Homestead Act, not the Homeless Act. Well, I'm going to call it the Homeless Act now. But it was the Homestead Act that was something back in the 1880s,
yes,
with that guy in that abandoned car in that residential neighborhood that wouldn't move out of there. And now, so I tell you, it's a slippery slope. All those people living in tents, all those people in cardboard boxes, all of that stuff are actually homesteading if you pay attention to her ruling in that thing. And that absolutely encourages and ratifies more homeless people to come into Seattle.
Well, and okay? Right after that, California jumped onto that, and they're trying to ratify something similar to that as well, where you can't, now you can't arrest people that are sleeping in their cars and,
that's correct,
and homeless. And they've actually put some places that are places you can park your homeless car, right, and sleep.
However, let me bring this around full circle for a second, because now we've got, we just talked about it, California passing that new law that says all the new houses have got to have solar, okay?
Right.
So guess what? You put up a new tent as a homeless person, that sounds to me, under the Homestead Act, that you've got a new home. Just
now
tell me how they're going
to put
that solar
tent
panel on top
possible.
Of there.
I don't know. I'm sure that they'll get some sort of a, you know, delay on that or whatever, because some attorney will pick that up. And
well, you know what I'm talking about, though. I mean, in all seriousness, sweetheart, you know, these politicians have created these problems by not studying, you know, the socio-criminal aspects of these things and not understanding what they're dealing with and what causes homelessness, okay? And so by not addressing it, by not using tough love, by not putting together the mental health and funding the mental health institutions and trying to help some of these people, by not treating the alcoholics and the drug abusers, by not doing that and kicking that can down the road, they create that problem. And now the problem is absolutely out of control. And so what are they going to do? They are going to tax the poor citizens that by and large had absolutely nothing to do with that problem. And now all those people are going to pay for the stupidity.
And we are those politicians. We are those people that are going to pay. And things that we buy are going to become more because of it. And it's a never-ending type of a circle, because somebody else is going to do it. California's going to see that they did that, and they're going to figure out some way to do that.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. It's, you know, on the West Coast, you know, whatever one state does, the other states, whether it's Oregon, Washington, or California, they're all pretty much together. Hey, I've got something else I want to talk about, and that is that the FBI just came out with a report that talked about armed citizens intervening in 4 out of the 50 active shooter incidents that we've had in the United States between 2016 and 2017. These people, actually armed citizens, taking on active shooters, actually saving lives. And, you know, we had that situation just down the road from us in Sutherland, Texas.
Oh, absolutely.
Where we, you know,
where a citizen intervened and saved lives there.
Absolutely. You know, and unfortunately, you know, that active shooter, you know, killed over 20 men, women, and children in that church. But if it hadn't have been for that armed citizen coming out of his house and taking that guy on, we would have lost a lot more people.
Well, speaking of that, recently you and I saw a video about a woman who stopped a robbery.
Oh, the off-duty police officer.
Right.
Yeah.
She was military.
She's military,
guess,
police. It was in Brazil.
And that's an amazing video. And I think it's gone viral now. And you can just see that she quickly acted, saved other people's lives, and shot the suspect.
Yeah. And So, and, you know, we do a lot of firearms training, and we teach our active shooter, you know, class and everything like that. And we tell people about being a responsible handgun owner and a person that carries concealed. And, you know, we never encourage people to jump in and do anything like that. But when the poop hits the blower and people are getting shot all around you or threatened, if they feel that that's what they have to do to stop it, then that's what they need to do. You know, President Trump just recently congratulated personally that young black man that, you know, foiled that active shooting event in that Waffle House restaurant.
Absolutely, as he should be congratulated.
Right? And he wasn't even armed. But how brave was that?
Right. Yeah. Well, it takes, it just takes all types of situations. And I always get the hypocrisy of all of these people who tell us that we can't have our firearms, and then they are surrounded by their own security force with firearms.
Well, you know? And you know what I always say, you know, it is behavior, not the weapon. Okay, the weapon itself
right.
is not going to kill anybody. You leave it on the table, it's not going to kill anybody. It takes somebody to pick that weapon up and have the intent and the behavior that that causes these tragedies.
Well, there was a 70-year-old lady the other day who was in her home asleep at night, and sometime in the middle of the night she heard some banging, and she thought it was her door, and actually it was somebody breaking the window and crawling into her house.
Oh my God.
And she grabbed her own firearm and took a shot at him and chased him right down the stairs and right back out of the house, and she actually shot him in the arm, and he took himself to the hospital, and then he was arrested. So good for her, because that's exactly what people need to do, because guess what? The officers can't get there in time if she even would have had time to make a call.
And you know, we were talking recently, and I think you're the person that brought it up, that said in the United States, each year, just women alone, mm-hmm. right?
200,000 times they use a firearm to foil a sexual assault.
And that's just women.
Yes.
Okay. 200,000 times a year. So just think of how many more victims that we would have had those women not been able to defend themselves with a handgun or a firearm.
Absolutely.
So
I'm all for that Second Amendment.
And I'm all for a second cup of coffee.
You got it.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, you get the last bite of cheesecake.
I love the cheesecake.
Okay.
Hang on a second.
Okay. You got it. So I have a story that I think is funny. I don't think it's meant to be funny, but I think it's funny. There's a liberal activist by the name of Tom Steyer, and he has supported every liberal person to be elected. So, you know, he was campaigning for Hillary, and he's very, very staunch liberal. So he put out a very bizarre Mother's Day commercial that was anti-Trump. And it shows this mother saying, it's a 60-second spot, shows a woman talking about how she missed the early warning signs that her young adult son had become a Republican. And she's warning other moms to take heed of the warning signs that your child is becoming a Republican. And she said, it wasn't until I met his college buddies that I realized that it was too late. And she shows him doing his laundry, and he's got a Trump t-shirt in his laundry. And it's so funny that, you know, he tried to make it be against Republicans, but it's actually pretty funny.
Is it a commercial for Republicans?
No. And at the end, the mother says, "This Mother's Day, talk to your children about the GOP." You know, that I wish I had. And I'll tell you, it's funny because in our house, we talk to our kids about the GOP all the time, but it's in a good way. But you know.
Well, I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, it's a funny story. So, but you know, we were talking a little bit ago, too, about, you know, high schools and my kind of passion that, that kids should, they don't all need to go to college. They can maybe have a trade. Everybody needs to be.
We were talking about that just
right.
the other day.
So, there is a high school that, you know how they have signing days for people that come in and they get sports, they get signed for sports teams and so forth right off the bat out of high school?
Oh, well, never having been that good, I must have missed that day.
Well, this school system in Virginia, what they do is they celebrate a day at the high school that's a signing day. But it's just for kids that have decided not to go to college that are going on into the workforce and getting a job.
That's interesting.
I think it's great. And it might be that they're going into a trade. It might be that they're going into a trade school. Mm-hmm. It might be that they're actually just going to go get a job, as a lot of students do after school. They want to take a break. Some,
right.
You know, everybody has a different path in life, and we need to respect that and stop making us little robots here. But I thought that that was really great in Virginia, that they were recognizing students who didn't want to take that path right now in their life and take another and honor their choice as well.
And I think that's important. You know, we've talked about this. Not everybody needs to go to college, but everybody needs to have a future.
Right. Absolutely. And by the way, in that school, over 5,000 students earn these certifications that make them eligible to get a job right after school. So, you know, they've got a great program that I think a lot of America should be looking at.
Well, that sounds really good. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, I have a little good news story that's kind of funny. There's a 91-year-old granny named Norma Howard, who she's a daredevil at 91. And you know those airplanes that you wing walk on?
Oh, you mean the biplanes?
No, biplanes.
The two wing planes.
And so she decided she was going to be the oldest woman that would wing walk on a biplane.
That's a bit scary.
Well, she did. And she said it was very cold up there.
And do you think?
That the hardest problem that she had was getting up onto the top of the plane there with all the clothing she was wearing. But now she's planning on rappelling down the Portsmouth Spinnaker Towers. That's her next adventure.
There's a woman with a death wish.
Here's a really interesting story about a man who's retiring. He's 81 years old. His name is James Harrison, and he lives in Australia. And the thing that's so interesting about this man is they call him the man with the golden arm. And the reason is not what you'd think. I mean, what would you think?
James Bond.
Well, you know, exactly, but kind of in a different way. This man has a very unique characteristic in his blood that he found out about when he was a teenager and he had some sort of accident and he needed to get a blood transfusion. He has a characteristic in his blood that has directly contributed to saving over 2.4 million
what?
Australian babies.
Whoa, so what's in the blood?
So women get a condition called rhesus. And rhesus is a condition in which a pregnant woman's blood attacks the unborn child.
What?
He has an antibody in his blood that stops this from happening. And I guess in Australia, according to the Red Cross, 17% of women that are pregnant are at risk for this particular condition. So there were, up until about 1967, thousands of babies dying each year, and doctors didn't know why. And they were having lots of miscarriages and brain damage and so forth. And it's just absolutely fascinating that this man, I have never heard of this, somebody having that type of an antibody that can help people that much.
Well, it's a first for me. I didn't know anything about that.
I know.
It's called rhesus. Is that like something to do with a rhesus monkey or something like that?
No, I don't think so. No, but the disease, that's the disease. Okay. But they were able to, what happened is this man has donated blood once a week for all these years, 60 years.
Wow.
He's donated blood once a week. And they took his blood and they manufactured a life-saving vaccine for the disease.
And there's no one else in the entire country that has this anomaly.
I don't know that, but over 3 million women have been treated with the vaccine from his blood that they made.
That's
so
absolutely
I think
amazing.
that is an absolutely amazing story. And I actually also have to make you should have caught me on this too, that I misspoke to you about Seinfeld, that it's 20 years. It's not 14 years. It's 20 years since his last episode.
Don't say that because it just makes me feel so much older.
You just got older.
Hey, well, I've got something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate to keep picking on California, but the Ninth Circuit Court, which, you know, is the most liberal court in the United States, the one that's had the most cases overturned.
Just love them.
In the United States. But here's something. They just had a recent ruling, and it was a 3-0 ruling. So that's a strong ruling that prevents people in California that have medical marijuana cards. You know, we used to call them Prop 215 cards, right?
Right.
Because that was what that was all about, Prop 215 a few years ago. But anyway, anybody that's got a Prop 215 card, they can't purchase firearms. Okay?
Okay.
And so they had a ruling about it. I guess a guy that had a Prop 215 card tried to buy a gun, and they found out he you know, was a medical marijuana user, and no matter the reason, and he was denied the ability to purchase a firearm, and he sued. And the Ninth Circuit said, nope, the law's on the books. You should have read the small print, and you can't have a gun. So I guess those people in California are waking up with a uh-oh.
Wow,
going to have an uh-oh moment.
Yeah, I think so. And I didn't realize that law was on the books. When was that put on the books?
Well, it had to be had to be around 2014. I think it was somewhere around 2014. But it's interesting because this person was a medical marijuana user, and this case came from a 2011 case, right? But he still had to, I guess, admit that he was a medical marijuana user. So it went through the courts, and they've ruled 3-0.
Wow.
So you're not going to find a stronger ruling than that.
Well, you know, and that's interesting because I'm wondering what the motivation was. So do they think that a person that smokes medical or marijuana for medical reasons, say they have some sort of a pain issue and it helps with that, that they are incapable of handling a firearm? Because And by the way, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I haven't thought about it enough to know if I agree or disagree. But you could really say that about a lot of things. What about people that drink alcohol?
Well, you know what? That you raised a good point. I know what the courts said because I wrote down a sentence, and it was a behavioral issue. And the courts ruled that he couldn't have a gun because the use of medical marijuana raises the risk of irrational and unpredictable behavior for which gun use should not be associated with. But I absolutely agree with you. That could go with anything, couldn't it? That could go with alcohol.
And yet, if they had that opinion and made that law, they staunchly supported approving marijuana for the public.
Right. And don't forget, you know, it's a state-by-state thing, right? Remember,
right,
it's still
sure.
against the law. It's still against federal law, right, to
right.
possess and grow marijuana. So it's a state-by-state thing in California, you know, and a few other states. I know Colorado, and I know there's a few other states that have legalized marijuana. But that's an interesting opinion by our Ninth Circuit that could certainly spread to other circuits in the United States.
Well, it is that I can think of a bunch of repercussions to that, and that is really, really interesting. So we'll have to see what happens with that.
So here's something pretty interesting that I came across today, and that is a story about the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Oh, from kind of where your family's from.
Well, from Pisa. And, you know, I lived in Italy, remember? And I actually lived two blocks away from the Leaning Tower of Pisa when my grandparents were alive, and I could look out my back window and I could see the Piazza del Ricordo and the Basilica and the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Anyway, so the Leaning Tower of Pisa leans at about 5 degrees.
Oh, okay. Boy, it seems like I thought it was more, too.
Yeah, but they say only 5 degrees, okay? And so the question was, since 1280, right, which is a long time ago, how has it survived, you know, earthquakes and all sorts of things that have happened there with the ground? And so they had 16 different engineers form a task force and do a study on the Leaning Tower. And they have attributed the survival of the Leaning Tower of Pisa to something that's referred to as dynamic soil structure interaction. Okay?
Okay, that's a mouthful.
Well, not being an engineer, I'll tell you what it means, okay? It means that the soil that the Leaning Tower of Pisa is built upon, in other words, the foundation of that soil is basically soft, and when the earth starts to move, as in an earthquake, what it does is, because it's soft, it mitigates the shock waves that would be, if it was hard,
be
transmitted into the tower and perhaps cause it to crack and cause it to break and fall. But because the soil surface is actually soft, it basically sucks up those vibrations and allows the tower to survive.
Okay, well, that makes sense. It also makes sense as to why the tower leans, because the ground is soft.
Yeah.
So that would make sense why it leans.
But I'll tell you what, I still think it leans more than 5 degrees, okay?
Well, it does look like that. And I'll tell you, you know, I mean, just... I'm almost ready to go to bed, but I have to say that I don't know if you caught today the just amazing photographs about the volcano in Hawaii.
The Kilauea.
The lava flowing is just amazing. And I have been going there since I was a child. And I've been to that volcano many times, and we've been to the volcano. Never got to see it spewing lava like this. But boy, this is really something to watch right now.
Well, you know, I really like the fact that over the years, we've decided that the Big Island of Hawaii is one of our favorite islands. You
yeah,
know, we're usually in Oahu,
beautiful.
And we're in Kauai a lot. We never go to Maui, you know, even though we have friends there. We're going to have to do that sometime. But, Desi, be quiet. We got our dog here. Okay, we're going to bed pretty soon. But anyway, I mean, I love staying at the Volcano House.
Yes, it's a wonderful place to stay, and right now you can't stay there at all. This dog is saying, put me to sleep, Dad.
Well, just hang on one second, Desi.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I will continue to watch it and see what happens.
You know, one of the things that I really like when we get up there and we stay at the Volcano House is, you know, walking on the various trails that are through there. And, you know, each time we find a different trail. And you remember last year when we went, we found that one where it kind of went through the venting.
Right.
You know, the steam vents.
Yes.
And I, with the sulfur vents and things. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating. But I always love to go to the Interpretive Center, you know, at night, mm-hmm. you know, when the sun goes down, and because you can't see it. you know, a flame or do anything like that. But at night, and I noticed that this last year when we went, remember it was...
There was fountains of lava, which we'd never seen before.
So that
should have told us that something was going on, but what do I know about volcanoes? But anyway, it's fascinating to watch. And it was cute that they had this little story about these two little dogs in the community where all the lava is flowing and the people are, you know, being evacuated, and their dogs were missing. And they have these two little rescue dogs that live there. Well, they actually got surrounded by the lava, and they could not get out.
Well, that's a scary thing. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
And when I see it on TV, I go, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And the flows are tall, and they're hot. And, well, anyway, they finally, after 10 days, they rescued these two little dogs. So that's a really good news story.
Well, you know, I hope all these people that are in that area just get out of there, okay? Because when I saw the fissures opening up
that
big, huge, wide fissure, and then they showed a drone flying over the big crater. You remember, we're in the interpretive center. We're looking into that. You know, we're a mile away, right? So we can't look into it. Well, they had a drone look into it, and it went like there was no bottom to it. And when you see that, when it starts sucking in, I just think of Mount St. Helens, and that was kind of like what was happening in Mount St. Helens before it just blew.
Right.
You know.
Well, that was very scary because the look from the drone was so different than what's been in there for the last number of years, where you could see lava, and now you can't see anything. Yep, something is brewing for sure.
Well, listen, you can always get another house, but you can't get another life.
That's
so
right.
I hope those people just get out of there. Hey, I got one more thing.
Okay.
And a good news story. So America's oldest veteran turned 112 this week. And
wow.
And I mean, 112 years old, my God.
Think of what he's seen in his life.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what I was thinking. And so, you know, they always ask you the question, you know, when you're that old guy, you know, so what's the key to life, you know? What's the key to your success in living so long? And he said, whiskey and cigars.
Well, everybody has to have their poisons. Obviously, those have worked for him.
So,
exactly. Me, that's not the direction I would be going in.
I think I'm going in that direction.
I'm not going with you there.
Hey, well, listen, you ready to join the dog and go to
Yes,
bed?
I am.
All right, sweetheart, I love you. Let's get ready for bed.